Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hey there, this is Sean. Let's revisit some terms like rat and roll, rockin' with Dawkins. Are they forgotten? Yeah. Does the music translate? Probably not. But you tell me Motley Crue's the only glam metal band worth remembering? Surely you can't be serious.
All right, D, what do you get when you take a crooner, a metal guitar god, a wild man in drums, you mix it all together, a lot of vodka, a lot of cocaine, and a little bit of Freddy Krueger? What do you get?
No, what do you get?
You get Dawkins. My question to you today is,
yes,
were they great or did they just get lucky?
Welcome, everybody, to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast. We are here talking about Dawkins, under lock and key.
Under lock and key.
And this is the second of two episodes that we're doing. First episode, we talked about Rat and Invasion of Your Privacy, and we're comparing it to this album today. And before we really get going, I mean, we're at the end of the episode, we're going to tell you which one of these albums we think are the best of the two albums, right? But in the last episode, we talked about kind of the incestuous relationship of these two bands.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, two-thirds of Rat has played with Dawkins at some point. And you had mentioned, and you know, I told a story about Jake E. Lee, who had been a guitarist for Rat, getting to leave that band to go play with Ozzy Osbourne. And you had mentioned this kind of interesting story about George Lynch trying out for the part and Jake E. Lee trying out for the part, and how they were both just kind of talking together. And then Ozzy came by and said, "You've got the part, you blew your chance." And it sounded like, when we talked about the story, that like it was like they both went in, you know, on the same day, both played their audition, and then they both left. I found out in researching Dawkins, George Lynch had the job. Like, he got hired to be the guitarist.
Okay.
Went with the band, did sound checks with the band. Like, he was there and involved. And within just like, I don't know, 3 days, a week, not very long, they decided they didn't want him anymore.
Really?
Right. Which is why that, you know, it's a terrible thing to say to somebody you've only just met, you blew your chance. But if it's a guy who like you, I hired you, and you were either so bad, which you can't say that George Lynch was bad at his job. It had to be his personality that they were just
100%.
Like. Now, I saw something where it was like he was, you know, poor at the time, and he had a job as a liquor delivery guy, and so he had to have short hair. And so the story was that Sharon Osbourne didn't like his look. Didn't like the short hair. And so she said, "I don't care if Jake Ely doesn't play as well. He's got a better look." I'm going to go ahead and call BS on that. I mean, if you got George Lynch's abilities on the guitar, who cares if he's got short hair? Throw a wig on. It doesn't matter. I mean, give him the haircut from Jamal or whatever his name
right.
is. Right? What video was that you sent me where he's got the haircut of the guy who sang Neverending Story?
Lamal.
Oh, Lamal, not Jamal.
Is that right?
I got the Cosby Show confused there for a second.
The guy who sings Neverending Story.
Right. He had that haircut. I don't know which one of them stole it for who, but.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, the interesting thing, I totally agree with you. It's his personality. He's very unbending. He's very difficult. He's temperamental. And Ozzy did not have to put up with that crap. Here's the other thing. Ozzy had shaved his head at this time. So pointing somebody out for having short hair doesn't fly.
Right. Yeah. So, no. All right. I think we got to jump into this album now.
Let's do it. Before we do, I want to give a quick overview. This album, Under Lock and Key, this was Dawkins' third album. I do think this album has something for everybody. You've got ballads, you've got speed rock, and you've got sort of these mid-paced melodic rockers that we love from the Sunset Strip.
Yeah. And this was their biggest selling album, right? Or at least at that point, this was their kind of, it was bigger than the previous two.
They were building to this one.
Right. And they had a live album, I think, that did really well too, right?
They did, because they could no longer handle each other in the studio.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
So we'll talk about that though.
Okay.
First song on the album is a song called Unchain the Night.
Okay, so I'm gonna tell you, like, we're comparing this to Rat out of the gate. By the way, this is the first time I've ever listened to this album. I had no experience with this album at all before we decided to do this podcast on it. And so, and researching it, first time, 49 years old, that I ever listened to this album. And out of the gate, first song, I'm like, this is gonna be better than Rat.
Okay, good.
Yeah, like, it's a great melodic introduction. You can feel the build of a concert, you know, is absolutely about to happen. Slow, dark. You've got some synthesizers going on, but it's not new wave kind of deal. It's more like a orchestral backing to this kind of, I mean, these guys could have, you know, they could have done a song for like Nightmare on Elm Street or something.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
So when I listen to this song, first of all, to me, this should have been a single. This is a great song. You can feel that concert opener. I'm like, this is a great concert opening song. Well, I looked, and during the Under Lock and Key tour, this was the concert opener.
Makes total sense. Yeah.
It fits, right? Now, I will say, for me in particular, like, I run to party rock. Like, it's my go-to. Mm-hmm. I really like these guys. I like what they're doing. I like their songs. I like their music. But almost none of this is party rock.
Right.
It has kind of a dark tone to it.
It's definitely a dark tone. They had a style that they were going for. You know, we talked about Rat being a fashion band, and these guys were definitely married to a style. They were given their own spin on it. I don't know what to say about Don Dawkins' choice of hats.
We'll talk about that here in a second.
The fringe on the leather and all that other stuff. I mean, I get it. It's just that Richie Sambora can pull it off and Don Dawkins cannot pull it off. But all that aside, I love Don Dawkins' voice. Like, he has got a melodic voice. It does not that screamer. I mean, he can do it. He can wail, but he's got some, you know, crooner chops to him, really.
He does, no doubt about it. You know, here's the interesting thing about Don Dawkins. Okay. Yeah. So he can sing, he can hit those notes, he can climb, and he can wail. I don't think he's taken very good care of his voice over the years. Mm-hmm. He's very gravelly. It sounds like he smoked a lot of cigarettes. The problem is that George Lynch was like a bodybuilder at one time.
Oh, yeah.
And he looks still cut up, and he looks 40, and he's nearly 70.
Wow.
So I've got the backstory on this. I wanted to tell some fun stuff for you. Okay,
yeah.
So in 1976, Don Dawkins starts this band called Airborne.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, within this band, you have Juan Crucier,
who played for Rat.
Of course, later lands in Rat and plays on Invasion of Your Privacy. Mm-hmm. And they had added Bobby Blotzer, who delivered a pizza one day.
Yeah, that's right. That's
Tell that story again.
Yeah, no, Bobby Blotzer. I mean, he was a drummer, but he was like every other drummer on the Sunset Strip. He was poor as dirt and living in a rat hole, and delivering pizzas. And he delivered the pizza to the place that Don Dawkins was practicing with his band.
Right.
And he sees the drum set. He's like, oh, you know, I play drums. And he's like, oh, yeah, let's see what you can do. Week later, he's in the band.
It's incredible, right?
He's like, our drummer is out. You are in.
So here's the interesting thing to me. So in this band, you've got, like I said, Juan Crucier and Bobby Blatzer. Both guys ended up in Rat. There was another band at the time named Airborne who had a record deal, so they had to ditch the Airborne name.
Yeah, Air with an A-E, like a Aerosmith kind of deal.
So during this time, they add Greg Leon and Gary Holland. Those guys were in a band called Sweet 19. Sweet 19 had a drummer you may have heard of. His name was Tommy Lee.
Yeah.
A lot of incestuous recruiting, adding, you know, yeah, building.
Nikki Sixx has been in the mix with them at some point. You know, yes, absolutely.
So they toured Germany in 1979, and they met up-and-coming producer Michael Wagner, who had worked with the band Accept.
All right, so let me tell you about Michael Wagner. Like, okay. He had been in this band, and then he gets drafted into the West Berlin Army, and it makes it hard to practice.
Yes, it does. Army. Yes, it does.
And so when he finishes his military service, that's how he starts working in production. He gets a job with an audio studio, and that's where he meets Don Dokken. And because of Don Dokken, he moves out to L.A. and produces that first album with him.
Really?
Yes. Now, Don Dokken is probably a large reason that he got his kind of introduction to bigger bands, but the bigger bands are pretty impressive. He was the one who produced Skid Row, Skid Row.
Is that right? I'd forgotten about that. Okay. Yeah.
He was. So we talked about him back when we did our Skid Row versus, was it Dr. Feelgood, I think, that we did that one against?
It was Skid Row versus Dr. Feelgood. That's okay. Right. Yeah.
And then he also mixed Master of Puppets, not too shabby.
What?
And engineered the single version of Janet Jackson's Black Cat. So he's got a whole range.
How about that?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Black Cat, known to be Janet Jackson's rock song.
Right, and known to be Michael Wagner's pop song.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So Michael Wagner, obviously German.
Sure. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So here's an interesting story for you. So first of all, Greg Leon leaves Dokken, or Don Dokken, to replace Randy Rhoads in Quiet Riot, because Randy Rhoads had left Quiet Riot to join Ozzy.
Yep.
Of course,
he dies.
He died in a tragic plane crash.
Yep.
Greg Holland left Don Dokken to join a band called Dante Fox, who we talked about, because that Dante Fox band later became Great White.
That's right. That's right.
Right?
Yes.
Now, Juan Crucier came back to Dokken, and during this time, they go to Germany in 1981 to secure this record deal.
Okay.
Okay? Now, Don can't go without a guitarist, right?
Right.
And he needs a drummer, and so he goes, and he talks to George Lynch and Mick Brown, who had been in...
Exciter.
Yeah. Right? They also had been in a band called The Boys, which I saw, like, Van Halen actually opened for The Boys at one point.
Oh, here's a story on this. Okay. I got to tell you the story.
Yeah.
So, you know, George Lynch, everybody, you know, wants to say that he stole Eddie Van Halen's style, you know, and that speed metal stuff, but they were really contemporaries on the LA scene. But throwback to our Van Halen episode from season one.
Yeah.
The Boys were supposed to have a showcase for Gene Simmons, because Gene Simmons was looking for a new band for his new record label. And unfortunately for The Boys, Van Halen opened up for them that night, and Gene Simmons was like, I don't need to see the second band. Let's go, boys. And that is how you get him producing their first, basically, demo album out in Europe.
How about that?
Crazy.
How about that?
Yeah.
So when Don goes...
Lesson, don't let Van Halen open for you on your showcase
exactly,
night.
Right? So when Don goes to talk to George Lynch and Mick Brown, he's like, hey, I've got this thing happening in Germany. I need a guitarist. I need a drummer. But what I really am interested in is this song you guys used to sing in your band called Paris is Burning.
Okay. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And so this is where it gets really murky. Okay, because you've got three people who have absolutely opposing opinions of what happened and what transpired.
Right.
Okay, so Don says, I went to George and I said, I would like to record your song, Paris is Burning. Is that okay? And George said, well, I mean, we don't really play that song anymore. I'm in another band and that's kind of old and that's not really happening. So yeah, just keep me informed of what's going on with it. Okay, that's Don's version. Mick and George are like, Don stole our song. Like, he just took it. And that is the beginning of their relationship.
Right.
Thieving right. Don stole our song, and we freaking hate that guy.
From the beginning. From the outset. Yeah.
So they do go on to play it. In fact, let's listen to it here.
That song begins with a solo, again, very Eruption by Eddie Van Halen, but moves into something that's entirely different. I saw George Lynch talking about that first album and how he was like, you know, we had this great sounding album. It was like a throwback to the 70s. It had all the right sounds. And then we left, and behind our back, Don Dokken like comes in and is a diva and turns his vocals way up too loud, which suppresses everything else and makes it just sound like a mushy mess. Then Don Dokken says, George Lynch wasn't even in the band. At that point,
right.
I hired George Lynch from Exciter for $2,500. The album's first pressing, it's Don Dokken, not the band Dokken.
It's Don Dokken.
Don Dokken. So they were playing on my CD. It was not, we were a band and I went behind their backs. They were hired guns, and that's how they got involved with the album at all.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy. Lots of crazy stories with these guys.
Let's go on to the next song.
Let's do it.
Next song on the album is a song called The Hunter.
So have you listened much Dio?
No.
So to me, I mean, just as a guy who doesn't have experience with Dokken, he has a very Ronnie James Dio sound to his voice.
I can see that.
Which Jeff Pilson, who played bass for them,
right,
would then go on later on to play for Ronnie James Dio. I actually got a story on that one. This is not a Dokken story, but it's a Jeff Pilson story.
Drop it.
But he's at his house. And Ronnie, and I don't remember who the other guy, one of his other bandmates, just knocks on his door, and he's like, he opens the door and he's like, he knew him because they had toured together, like they had toured with Dio. And he's like, hey, Ronnie, what's up? And he's like, okay, so like, Jimmy hasn't shown up at the studio for like 3 days. Do you know anybody who would want to play bass on this album that we're recording? And he's like, yeah, me. I would love to play bass for you. He's like, but I've got this issue with my sprinklers and they won't work. And Ronnie Dio is like, let me see what I can do. 15 minutes later, he has the sprinkler system fixed.
What?
So basically, he fixes the sprinkler system. Jeff Pilson then goes with him, records, and they're like, you're great. Come tour with us. And so he's in the band for the next
That's
4 years.
Story. I like it. I like that one.
Right? Can you imagine Ronnie James Dio is in your yard, you know, on his knees, digging through the, fixing sprinklers. It's just crazy.
It's no problem. I got a shovel.
I got a screwdriver. We'll get this fixed.
So this song, this is the first single for this album. This was released December 10th, 1985. It reached number 25 on the mainstream rock chart. It's a mid-tempo rocker. It's melodic. It's got a great chorus. Mm-hmm. We've started off bang, bang for me. You got two great songs right off the bat.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the video.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is the era before they really figured out the music video. Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you on that.
You think they figured it out?
No. I think they, in the larger sense, figured it out. I think that Dokken had not yet figured it out.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah. Because videos were of much better quality by this time in history, but they were still making videos like it was 1982.
Yes, they were. They were. So I watched this video, okay? And so you've got the guys walking the streets of LA. So far, so good, right? You're showing the gritty streets, whatever. And then you have this weird scene where Jeff Pilson is like being pursued by like rednecks with coon dogs. Okay.
Okay.
Like chasing him through the woods. And I'm like, what does this have to do with it? nothing about
somebody
the song.
Saw Twilight Zone the night before they made the video and they're like, hey, I got an idea.
Right. Right.
It's crazy.
You do have the LA tunnel where Terminator was shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pull out the red Magnum PI Ferrari that looks friggin' fantastic in this video.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to get back to what was happening in Germany. So, Don Dokken goes over to Germany, and he meets, of course, Michael Wagner. Things are not happening in L.A., and so he up and moves to Germany. I sent you a trivia question today.
Yeah.
I said, what is the Surely You Can't Be Serious song that we have covered on Patreon that Don Dokken hates?
And the answer is...
My Sharona. My Sharona.
And I said, so he has terrible taste in music.
Right.
No, but I mean, it was a different sound than the Dokken sound for sure. But I don't understand how it ruins the music scene for years.
So I saw him talking about this. He said that overnight rock went uncool and like nerdy pop new wave was like the hot new thing.
Mm.
Now, Don, I think he's got a tendency to embellish and overreact.
Yeah.
But at the time, it did at least cause him to say, forget this, I'm going to Germany.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which worked out.
And it did. It did. And, of course, he takes George Lynch and Mick Brown with him. Mm. Okay. And Juan Crisier. Now, while in Germany, he's over there, and Klaus Meine for the Scorpions is having a vocal issue. And the Scorpions are not sure if he'll be able to sing anymore.
Right. Can you imagine?
I was like, what? So they bring in Don Dokken to maybe take over for Klaus Meine in the Scorpions.
Yeah.
And he does some demos with them as the Scorpions.
Yeah.
And ultimately, of course, Klaus recovers and it's all fine. But he actually does end up singing backup on the album Blackout.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So Don Dokken sings backup vocals on the Scorpions album Blackout.
Yeah, Blackout. I saw that he said that there were, that, you know, called them the rough tracks or whatever, the rough vocals, where he would just, and he said he kind of just did it as a favor for Klaus because he didn't have any great expectation that he would be in the band. It was just like they needed someone to do the singing parts until Klaus got back, hoping that Klaus was going to get back.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
While they're over there, George and Mick are sitting around doing nothing while Don's singing with the Scorpions.
Right.
And so... they become studio musicians for Udo Lindenberg. Now, I don't know a lot about him. I'm gathering, and just from the looks of it, he kind of looks like the German version of Mick Jagger or David Bowie. Just kind of an older rocker who needed some guys playing a guitar.
Right.
And so they're like, well, we're here. We got our guitar. We're available. So okay. Those guys benefited from the trip to Germany as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Now then, they come back to the States.
Mm-hmm.
And they take Michael Wagner with them. So they go back and they sign with Cliff Bernstein, who is with Q Prime Management.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't remember who we talked about with them, but I do remember talking about them before. Yeah.
Those guys represented Def Leppard.
Oh, that was it then. Yeah. Right. Yeah,
so this is a big thing. I saw George Lynch talk about this. He said, we went from being a mediocre band to being a big time band, mainly because Q management was pushing us.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's not the first time we've heard that story too.
Yep.
Guys, and, you got to go get better.
Right. And the first song that they released right out of the gate is a song called Breaking the Chains. That is a fantastic song.
Yeah. Great video to go with it too, right?
I love the video, man. Very literal, right? They're all like, George Lynch has got the chains on his guitar.
And before we get too far away from the origin story of George Lynch, you know, we mentioned that he was with Mick Brown and the boys. And I sent you a text today because they had two lead singers, a man and a woman.
Okay.
The man's name was Greg Sanford. The woman's name was Lisa Firstbanker, which I think may be the best last name I've ever heard.
Lisa and Firstbanker.
Lisa Firstbanker.
Oh, man. Whatever happened to her?
I don't know, but I hope she had a boy.
No kidding. My gosh. So Don talked about how Breaking the Chains was what they called a passive radio hit. And what that means is that radio played the heck out of it, but it didn't sell a lot of albums.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of a success and kind of a failure, too. So do you remember we talked about Alan Niven when we talked about Great White?
Yep.
So Alan Niven was a record producer.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, Don Dokken talked Alan Niven into going to see this band called Dante Fox.
That's right.
And Alan Niven went and was like, nah, no thanks. And Don Dokken's like, well, no, go again. Go. These guys are really good. Go check them out.
Right.
Now, we talked about this in our Great White episode. Dante Fox ultimately becomes Great White. So he goes back a second time and he sees him and he's like, nah, not for me. So Don's like, I'm coming with you on this third time because you're missing it. And when he went and saw the third time, of course, magic happened.
Encore song that they did was what cinched it.
At that moment, Great White, as we know it, was born thanks to Don Dokken.
Yeah.
Go back and check out our Twice Shy episode where we covered Great White.
Yep.
Okay, before we go any further, let's go to the next song.
Let's do it.
Next song on the album, big hit song. This song is called In My Dreams. My man, Dan Huff.
So many times over the years,
yes,
you have huffed me and have finally had the opportunity to huff you back.
I haven't been huffed in a long time. That was great.
Ah, the band Giant. It was See You in My Dreams.
One Giant song from 1990. Great song. I'll See You in My Dreams by Giant.
Yeah. By the way, we covered that one in our Patreon.
We did.
As well. Okay. So for those of you who don't know, that See You in My Dreams is a favorite song of Jason's and the band Giant, and he would sneak it in every opportunity along with Dan Huff, who's a brilliant guy.
Yes. He's played on a bajillion albums that you've heard.
Produced a bunch more. Fantastic guy. But I go back and check out our Patreon page because you would get to hear that episode, which you don't get to hear unless you're a Patreon member. So you're missing out on Giant and Dan Huff and See You in My Dreams. But you're missing out on a ton of other stuff as well. Go to patreon.com/surelypodcast. Sign up for free. Pay little as $5 a month. You get access to all of our prior One Hit Wonder episodes, which are some of our best. So don't forget to do that. Now, back to the actual In My Dreams song that we're here to talk about today. Here is Dokken.
In my dreams, it's still the same. Your love is strong, it still remains.
So now, as I mentioned, I didn't listen to Dokken in my high school days.
Right.
At all.
Right.
Like, not a bit. Maybe unless, you know, just they were on MTV while I was doing something else. That's it. But I heard this song and I was like, I know this song. How do I know this song? And the answer is, I didn't listen to Dokken, but I did listen to The Party from the new Mickey Mouse Club. Had a total crush on Tiffany Hale, God rest her soul. I just found out about her passing. Terrible. And so, yeah, I probably very much knew the Party version of this song.
Let's listen to it. You brought us here. Let's listen to it. We must stop this crap immediately.
So to tap into the boy band craze that was hitting in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, like New Kids on the Block, the new Mickey Mouse Club decided to put together not even just a boy band, it was a boy and girl band, but took some of their older, more attractive Mouseketeers and made The Party. And I don't know how they chose to do a Dokken song from 1985, but this song by Dokken charted at 77 on the Hot 100.
Yeah.
The Party version charted in the top 40 at number 34.
No. 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 Okay.
Now,
yeah.
The rest of the story is, if you go look at Spotify, Dokken has 895,000 followers. The party has 5,000 followers. So, you know, okay. Tastes, you know, at certain points in history, some things prove themselves out better than others.
I mean, it's a great song.
Yes.
It's the second single.
Uh-huh.
It, like you said, number 77 on the Hot 100. Number
best song in the album to me. I'm spiking the football. That's the best song in the
okay.
album.
Okay.
Yeah. What can I say or do? You will come back when through. I realize too late that maybe you learn the turn away. In my dreams, it's still the same. Your love is gone.
I love it. I think it's truly a great Dokken song. I think yeah. there is one song that's better. We'll talk about that here in a minute.
Okay.
But I love the... Do you know the drama behind this song?
No, tell me.
Okay. So Don Dokken writes this song while on a beach in Mexico. Okay?
Yeah.
So it's just him, the sand, the surf, and his acoustic guitar. And he's out on the beach one night, and he's just looking at the sunset thinking, man, this is just so beautiful. It's like a dream out here. Okay? So... He just starts to kind of strum his acoustic guitar. He kind of have a knack for coming up with choruses, right?
Yeah.
So he comes up with this great chorus. Takes about 40 minutes, according to him, to just write this song, okay? When he brings it back to the guys from Mexico, George hates it. Hates it. I'm not playing that stupid-ass song. Well, yes, you are, George, because it's a good song and we're playing it. We're putting it on the record.
Yeah.
So George says, I am not playing guitar on this song. And Don's like, fine, I'll play guitar on this song, because he can play.
Yeah.
So George is like, fine, I'll play guitar. Well, then he plays it, but he plays it poorly on purpose, like he's sabotaging the song. And Don's like, freaking screw you, George, if you can't do it right, I'm taking over. So ultimately they pushed each other and they got it done, and it goes on to become like a Dokken classic. But the whole time George was like, this song sucks, I'm not playing it.
Well, it's more melodic than most of the other stuff on the album. And I'm going to say this. I mean, George Lynch's guitar skills are incredible.
They're
outlier level. But quite frankly, it's not real catchy. Like his guitar solos are not ones that you're going to hum along to like you do with Hotel California or any Jimmy Page solo or any Jimi Hendrix solo. Like, it just, I mean, even Eddie Van Halen with his speed had a melody to what he was playing. Kurt Hammett, it's same thing. But I don't know, George Lynch's stuff is just like a lot of notes all together that fit,
but I totally agree.
It's not singable.
When you watch him climb and tap and do
It's absurd.
It's what he does is amazing to look at,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't make my heart sing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to talk about this video for just a second.
Okay.
Okay. This is, without a doubt, maybe their most ridiculous video. Okay.
Okay.
It's Don Dokken's favorite, though.
Okay.
He said he really likes the energy of this video.
Uh-huh.
But he's got his hat on.
Yeah.
He's got his hat on. And he's got this leather jacket that's got all these tassels, and it's like pouring down rain.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's swinging his arms and tassels going everywhere, and it's pouring down rain. Okay. And it's... It looks like it's made with two VCRs. You remember the old two VCR
yes,
setup, right?
Yes.
And yeah. I just, when I watch, you know, George is playing guitar. Everybody wears gloves. Like, they look like batting gloves to me. I'm like, why do you guys have batting gloves on? So the video is goofy. It's raining, but not in a good way. It just looks terrible.
Not in a good way. Where you can actually see the faucet head over the-
Wayne Isham's like showering them. So, but I do think that this song is a truly great Dokken song.
It really is. It really is. Okay, is this the video where, like, at the end, it's a split screen and the woman is singing while he's holding the paper?
No, that was Breaking the Chains.
Okay, so you know the story on this.
Tell me about the woman in the video of Breaking the Chains.
Okay, so I may be mixing my stories here, right? But I'm pretty sure they like met this girl, like they were having a pre-party or whatever it was, and she was Italian, and she was trying to have them tell her how to say, you know, hello, how are you, in a like a cool, suave, you know, slang kind of way.
Yes.
And Don tells her, say, I'm a swalla. She's like, I'm sorry, what? And she's and he's, tell him I'm a swallower. And she's like, a swallower? She's, he's like, yeah, like a bird, like a swallow. Tell him I'm a swallower. Mm-hmm. Everybody says that. So she's walking around the party saying, I'm a swallower. Well, it, if I'm right, she's the girlfriend of the director of the video.
You're mixing your stories.
Okay. Well, anyway, yeah. That's a good story too.
It is, yeah.
But anyway, so Alan Arkush is the one who directed the Breaking the Chains video.
Right, right.
And he wants his girlfriend in the video.
Right.
And they're like, no.
Right.
Like, no. She's not that good looking. And
she's not.
She's just not.
She looks like she left the gym and needs to go fix her hair.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's not. I wouldn't kick her out of my bed for eating crackers, but I wouldn't put her in a music video.
That's
either.
Right. That's right.
You know, and so, but they're like, no, we can't. You're not going to do it. And so what Alan Arkush, who, I mean, at that point, he had directed like Rock and Roll High School. I don't know if you saw that one.
I did, yes. With the Ramones?
Yeah, because that was the other stuff. He had done Ramones videos.
Yeah.
And not
now,
much
keep
else.
In mind, I don't want to interrupt you, but
yeah.
Keep in mind, Rat is, they have Tony Katane.
Yeah.
Right, they're right. Coming out strong,
right? Yeah,
and then this is like the director's girlfriend. No,
yeah, no,
bad idea,
bad idea. But they tell him no, and then they see the video, and he has basically snuck in, recorded her, and then done a split screen.
She's like, I love you. She's doing stuff, it's and they're terrible. Like, no,
it is terrible.
So I guess we can't totally blame the bad videos on the band,
right? Right. I mean, then that, but that was 82. That was 82 when they were hiring guys who had done a bad Ramones movie or a Bud Light commercial the day before, you know?
Well, I'm glad that you threw back to Breaking the Chains because I've got a little bit more I want to tell you about.
Okay,
this,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So the record company only produced 100,000 copies of their EP, okay? So when that sold out, they were not going to produce anymore. And that was going to be the end of Dokken because the record company just flat did not believe in these guys.
Yeah.
They had a great song, radio played it a lot, but people didn't buy the record. Sorry, it didn't work out. And so Don says, wait, guys, listen, we showed you we can write hits. You just got to give us one more chance. We just got to have one more chance, please. Yeah. And he begged them. And so that's why they called the next album Tooth and Nail.
That makes sense. I mean, the full story on that is they had gone out and they had toured, you know, and they were doing very well on their tour. It didn't do super great on the album sales,
right?
But they had done very well on their tour, and they had the same thing that happened to Van Halen. They get back from this tour where they've been bigger and bigger and bigger shows, and the record company is like, guys, that was great. You almost paid for the album. You only owe us $3 million. Like, what? Which, I mean, I was thinking about that because we were talking about that today because album sales used to be the driving factor for record companies and money and ultimately bands, right? Because that's who would pay bands. But now it's the concerts.
Ticket sales.
Because everything's available for free, basically, on YouTube or a $10 subscription on Spotify. Nobody's going out and buying $12 albums anymore except for, you know, you vintage heads out there. Hi, Chris Weber. And thank you for our wall.
Love you, Chris Weber.
But you see those tickets from back in like 1982, and it was $7.50 to see Rat, Motley Crue, and Dokken on the same bill.
Right,
you know, it's just
right.
And so, but now it's $150 for the nosebleeds of a gigantic arena.
I know. Yeah, I have ticket stubs in my drawer downstairs. Bon Jovi and Skid Row, $23.50, and I thought, dang, that's kind of high. Not anymore.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So the next album is Tooth and Nail.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now this is where they get Cliff Bernstein producing, right? We talked about him with Q Prime Management.
Mm-hmm.
They want an A-list producer for Tooth and Nail.
Yeah.
Okay. And so who do they get? They get the hot new producer, Tom Werman, who had just had Motley Crue's big album, their breakthrough album,
yeah,
Shout at the Devil. So Motley Crue comes out of the gate with this massive album, Shout at the Devil. It's kind of a hair metal game changer, maybe the greatest hair metal album of all time. We've got to cover it at some point.
Sure.
And they respond with, we hate Tom Werman. The band, like Dokken, they can't stand the guy.
What?
Yes.
Why?
So here's the story. First of all, they all hate each other.
Yeah.
And they're toxic personalities. So I heard Jeff Pilson talking about this. So when Tom Werman, actually, he talked about how they got along great until kind of the end. So Don Dokken was working on his vocals and Tom Werman was working with him and they were trying to do it and it just wasn't happening. And finally, Tom Werman had to say, you know what? This is just isn't going to work, but I have an idea. Jeff Pilson, you're in the band. You want to be a producer eventually. Why don't you sit with Don and work out the vocals? And so Jeff was like, okay. And so they did and it worked, right? Bandmate basically led the other bandmate into singing. Okay.
All right.
Now then, the story with George Lynch is amazing. Do you know this one?
No, keep going.
All right. So in the studio, they had this other guy who was one of the engineers for Tooth & Nail is this guy named Jeff Workman. He had worked on the mix for Bohemian Rhapsody.
Right.
Very talented, very gifted engineer.
Right.
Okay. He was also a coke addict and another toxic personality.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. So one of the things that he did... I heard Jeff Pilson talking about this. One of the things that he did was he would record the conversations that Tom Werman had in the, like in the booth. Okay. So it's this crazy, it's this wacko story of him setting up sound equipment to record his boss saying things during the course of whatever, whatever. And so he would go home at night and he would edit that to make him say awful things. Okay. And so Jeff Pilson's like, listen, I'm partially responsible because I knew he was doing it and I knew it was going to be, it was supposed to be kind of a practical joke, but he goes, but I also knew George wouldn't take it well. Okay. And so Jeff Workman made it sound like Tom Werman, and I'm reading between the lines here a little bit, had sexual feelings for George Lynch. Okay.
Okay.
So keep in mind, this is all behind Tom Werman's back.
Uh-huh.
And so Jeff Workman is playing this for George Lynch going, listen to what he said about you. Okay. Now, Jeff Pilson's like, we were using tapes. You could clearly hear that we were editing words together. He goes, I thought he would understand that we were joking.
Right.
Well, guess what? George did not
get the
think
joke.
It was funny at all.
Uh-huh.
So one day, Tom Werman's listening to George's solo, and he says, you know, George, you're a really good guitarist, but that's just not very melodic. Why don't you work on something, make it a little more melodic, and let's come up with something better. And George blew his top. So he throws his guitar and he's like, that's it. I can't take it anymore. And so Werman actually says, you know, through the callback button, George, I can see you're very unhappy. Would you like to come in here and hit me? And George, he said, George declined. But Tom Werman's like, I can't do this. I'm out. See you guys later.
Yeah.
And so Michael Wagner had to come in and finish the mixing for
right.
Tooth & Nail because Tom Werman's like, got to go.
So Tom Werman was, I mean, he did a lot of stuff, but he goes on to do the musical direction, I believe, for a movie that they're making based on the Judas Priest story called Metal God.
Right.
And in the story, it's this guy who gets the job to replace the lead singer who's in some tribute band to the band. I mean, it's just like the Judas Priest story. Ultimately they decide, okay, the Judas Priest band was not happy with how things were going. And so they're like, okay, well, we'll pull it back and we'll make it more general. And instead of naming the movie Metal God and starring Brad Pitt, which was the initial plan,
what?
They made it Rockstar starring Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Metal God became Rockstar to have a broader audience appeal. And Tom Werman, being the guy who's in charge of the musical direction and also involved heavily with the rest of the production, is like, hey, you know, I know guys who are actual musicians who would be great to come in and play some parts in here. So he gets Zakk Wylde.
Yes.
Play guitar.
Yeah.
Jason Bonham to play the drums.
Yes.
And Jeff Pilson to play the bass.
How about that?
There you go. Yeah. So if you guys watch the movie Rockstar, those are the guitarist, the drummer, and the bass player are all actual musicians.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Next song on the album is a song called Slipping Away. Like a whisper, you came in the night. Gone for.
Skaters move to the center of the rink.
Yeah, yeah. I think I could have made out to this in 1985. Okay. I'm pretty sure.
Really?
I'm pretty sure I could have.
Okay. I was 9 going on 10 in 85, so I wasn't making out with anybody yet.
Maybe 86. But so to me, this is their attempt to recreate the magic that was Alone Again. I think it was a swing. I think it was a miss. This is your saccharine ballad on the album. I don't think there's any great ballads on this album, but there was on Tooth and Nail.
Okay.
And so I want to talk about that.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
So during the course of writing Tooth and Nail, Tooth and Nail has a few big hit songs, okay? They've got a song called Into the Fire. Mm-hmm. They've got a song called Just Got Lucky. And then they've got another song called Alone Again.
I said it in our Rat episode, and I'll say it again. When the hard rock and heavy metal band breaks out the 12-string or the piano, it's time for a power ballad. That is a great one. That's a great tune. I like it.
So Alone Again was the song that pushed Dokken up from just another band with some songs and some videos to next level. That's when they went up a notch.
Okay.
Okay. And the funny thing is that George Lynch hated that song as well. Okay. And literally, that when you talk about Dokken songs, that's in your top five of which maybe that might be number one biggest Dokken song.
Okay? Okay, yeah.
And it goes on to become this massive hit, third single. And, you know, Don was trying to sell it to the guys. He's like, guys, listen, this is the time when people expect you to write a solid ballad. And that's a song that can sell another million copies.
Yeah.
And turns out Don was right.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, this, in addition to all of the other fights that these guys have, I think this is kind of a major point of contention, especially as the band progresses and we get to the 90s, that Don wants to become more radio friendly, more melodic, more, I don't want to say pop, but, you know, closer to pop than they've been. And George is wanting to push the envelope in the other way and be even less melodic, which this album, just to throw the idea out there, obviously they've got Michael Wagner back, right?
Yeah.
And so he's done all these great metal albums, but they also have producing a guy named Neil Kernan. You know who this is? Mm. Okay, so he's got a whole slew of things, but his big, like his most important deal was 1980, 81, and 82, the Hall & Oates albums, Voices, Private Eyes, and H2O. Like, whoa. Changed their career trajectory, were huge pop, I mean, talk about crooner, that kind of music. And so I can see, you know, like there, this push to try to get a little more of the radio friendly ideal for this metal band. And I can see George just fighting tooth and nail against it.
On that note,
yeah,
let's go to the next song.
Okay.
Next song on the album is a song called Lightning Strikes Again.
So this is definitely an answer to that last song.
Yeah, it is.
A George Lynch answer to the Don Dokken song.
They let George off the leash on this one. But, I mean, you still have a great chorus. It's a hard, more energetic rocker.
Yeah.
But that solo, man, that is a face melter.
Yeah.
So
still not melodic, though.
It's not melodic.
It's blazing speed metal that you just kind of, wow, that's fast. Look at it go by.
What was it? I can't remember if we talked about it on Van Halen, but there's a difference between playing a melodic solo and what they call wanking off. So
you're saying George Lynch is a wanker.
He likes to wank off a little bit.
Well, who doesn't? But I mean, yeah, he does. He does it all over the album. That's for sure.
So, I like this one. It is a hard rocker. Most of the time, those are a little bit too much for me, but I think it's great. So far, I'm on board, with the exception of Slipping Away, which was kind of a miss ballad. Mm-hmm. I thought for side one is great.
Yeah.
Hit stop on your tape player, kick it out, flip it over. Let's go to side two, and we start off what I think is the best song in the album. This song is called It's Not Love.
Okay, so I can see why you love this song, because this is very Bon Jovi-esque. Like, I heard this song and I was like, this sounds like the beginning of Bad Medicine. And I realize it predates Bad Medicine.
Right, right.
I, at this point, fully believe that John Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora listened to the Dokken and were like, hey, we could do this. Just switch it up a little bit. Da-da-dum.
Yeah.
But all that being said, I don't fault you at all for picking this as the best one. It's definitely a... it's a jammer, man. I can see this one being like they've played their whole set. Thank you, Cleveland. Good night. And everybody's like, more, more, more.
Yeah,
more.
Yeah.
And then to that, bam, 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 and the crowd just goes nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. And the chorus of this song, not only is it melodic, but it's also, the crowd can sort of chant it.
Yeah.
Right? It's not love.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I love this one. I want to talk about the video. First of all, this is the third single off the album, third mm-hmm. and final single.
Yeah.
It was released June of 86. Okay. Now this video, I called you this week and I said, this is like U2's Where the Streets Have No Name.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you'll remember in that video, they're on top of a warehouse and they start a concert, right?
Yeah.
And Dokken
just to remind our audience, the Where the Streets Have No Name is the rooftop video where they actually perform on the rooftop, and it starts off with the cops saying, you guys got to get yourselves out of here, and they manage to sneak in one song, which, of course, that was totally stolen from the Beatles.
From the Beatles,
So this, you can say, since it predates it, this is their version of the Beatles.
This is their version of the Beatles.
Last song, yeah.
Okay.
Live performance.
So instead of being on top of a warehouse or a store or whatever it is, they rent like a flatbed trailer on like an 18-wheeler truck, right?
Yeah.
And they've got the drums and you got the guitar and they've got speakers and they're driving around the streets of LA.
Don't forget the driver. I mean, good gracious.
That's
like,
true.
Like the from the ground shot of her climbing into the big rig with her badunk booty.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, holy smokes, those were some sprayed on jeans right there.
Yes. It was glorious. It was a glorious time.
That's great.
But they're driving around LA. Mm-hmm. You can actually see, you see Gazzari's.
Oh, yeah.
You see Tower Records, mm-hmm. right? And it's just the Sunset Strip. Now, I wanted to point something out to you, okay? George has a couple of very identifiable guitars that he plays.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
One of them is what they call the Tiger Stripe guitar.
Yep.
And that's from the earlier, like Breaking the Chains and stuff like that.
Yep.
In this video, he's got a special made skeleton guitar.
Uh-huh.
He plays it in the Dream Warriors video, which we'll talk about here in a second.
Sure.
Okay. Do you know his name for that guitar?
Oh, I do, but I can't remember it. Tell me.
He calls it Mom.
Mom, that's right.
Right? Now,
what kind of growing up did he have?
The skeleton guitar, which I thought, man, that is the coolest guitar,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
It was created by George's neighbor. Do you hear this story?
It's J-Frog, right?
J-Frog, yeah, Johnny Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
They call him J-Frog. He was a Hollywood special effects guy. He carved it from solid maple. He even added his own tooth to the skull in this guitar, right?
How did he get his tooth?
I don't know. I don't know. I just report the news.
Okay.
That guitar is now in New York City's Hard Rock Cafe.
Sure. Well, that makes sense.
But it's on display. Now then, I sent you and James Buckley this week. I'm like, I'm just watching this video, and the crowd is gathering, and people are cheering and having fun. And this is as close to party rock as Dokken gets.
Yeah.
And I told you guys, I'm like, the braless beauty who jumps Don Dawkins' bones at the end of this video It just harkens back to a wonderful time.
It's everything that made me want to be a rock star, I'll tell you that.
Well, I need to say more. Wowzers.
Okay, next song?
Next song on the album is a song called Jaded Heart.
Let me just say, I love my 12-string power ballads. Yes. I mean, give me When the Children Cry, give me Wanted Dead or Alive. I mean, I love them.
Yes.
This is a miss for me.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's not a good song.
It's a, it's like a Multiplicity when you get the copy of a copy of a copy.
This is the one with the boot on its head.
Yeah, that's right. It was an attempt. It's got some similarities, but overall it just is it's a whiff.
Right. Yeah, right? It's not right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Next song on the album is a song called Don't Lie to Me. Okay, I like this one.
This is absolutely a redeemer for the last one, no question about it. It's very Scorpions, Here I Am, Rock Me Like a Hurricane. Yeah. And I would fully believe that George Lynch lifted, if not the chords, the kind of pacing and style of that song from the Scorpions, because I have heard him, like they asked him, I can't remember what the Dokken song was, but they were like, oh, tell us about this one. He's like, oh yeah, I was listening to Judas Priest, and this was this, I absolutely stole this from Heads Are Gonna Roll.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the Dokken song is, but I mean, he, like every other artist that we've talked about, heavily borrowed from other folks.
Yes. Is this the point in the podcast where we talk about Nightmare on Elm Street? Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Dream Warriors. There we go. All right.
Which I believe to be the second best Nightmare on Elm Street movie, right behind the original.
So okay.
Let's talk about it.
Okay. So in the video for Dream Warriors, there's a spot where George is supposed to come crashing through the wall, right? It's kind of like reminiscent of a scene. And who's the actress that was in
Patricia Arquette.
Patricia Arquette is supposed to be there screaming or whatever,
right? She is in True Romance. I didn't even think about that.
Yes. So she's in True. Yes. We talked about her on her True Romance versus Natural Born Killers episode.
That's right.
She's hot as a freaking firecracker.
Hot as a firecracker.
Both in the late 80s and the early 90s. But anyway, I have a couple of stories here. Number one, first, let's just talk about George Lynch, all right? Well, I mean, we've talked about him plenty, but Jeff Pilson talks about the first time that he met George Lynch. He was playing in a cover band, right? And the guys from Dokken are needing a bass player, and so they're going to come listen to him play. And before the show, he knows what they're coming for, but he's like, hey, guys, the other guys in the band, they don't really know about this. So if we could keep it, you know, quiet, that'd be great. He said, George really can't handle his alcohol very well. And like halfway into the show, he is bombed out of his mind, literally screaming to the entire place, this bass player's badass and we're going to steal him from this band. Later, George is face down. This is the day they met. George is face down in Jeff Pilson's front yard in a pool of his old food, his vomit.
His former chewed up food.
And there is a photo out there that Jeff's girlfriend took of him with like coffee and a piece of burnt toast holding it over George Lynch face down on the lawn.
Oh, man.
Okay, so by the time he had Nightmare on Elm Street money, he had graduated up to cocaine on a pretty heavy scale.
Yeah.
He had, you know, as the coke addicts do, basically quit eating, and he's supposed to bust through this wall, and he's like, this is a wall that, like, an infant should be able to bust through. Right. Like, it's made to be bust. He goes, I was so high and so weak, I couldn't bust through the wall, which if you look at the rest of the video, you see him laughing. He's laughing at himself at how bad a shape he is in. Now, the rest of the story, the one I called you about, and I was like, do you know this story? Yeah, and you're like, no, I don't know. And I'm like, don't research it, because I got to tell you.
Right.
So he wasn't the only one at the set who was doing cocaine back in the late 80s.
Okay, right.
Now, we know that he kind of hooked up with Patricia Arquette later on, right?
There's something right there.
There was something that happened.
Yeah.
But Robert Englund was there, and he had some cocaine, and they literally did coke off of Freddie's knife fingers. He said they cut it, and then they used it like a spoon to sniff it up. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
I mean, you got to say at that point in history, I mean, we're at Dream Warriors 3. This is everybody knows who Freddy Krueger is.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, I am doing coke with Freddy Krueger off his glove. This is crazy.
That's awesome.
I've finally made it.
That is hilarious.
Yeah.
Great story. You know, that Back for the Attack album, that's the album after Under Lock and Key. Mm-hmm. Came out in 87. That's really where I kind of jumped on board. I had heard songs, but I bought Back for the Attack, partially based on Dream Warriors, because I just love the movie, I love the song. The video where they defeat Freddy by playing rock music at him. You know? But the best Dokken song, in my opinion, is off Back for the Attack. And That song is called Burning Like a Flame.
To me, production-wise, Don's voice sounds sonically better on that song than I think any song on this album.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Really good.
All right. Next song on the album?
Let's do it.
Next song on the album is a song called Will the Sun Rise?
Now, how are you going to have an album at the height of the Reagan era and not have a song about the apocalyptic atomic war and what happens the next morning?
Will the sun rise when it's over? I don't know. I like this song, though. I think it's fun. I think it's that good. It's a hair metal, kind of a feel-good. Actually, it's not a feel-good song, but it's
one where the music thinks you should feel good, but hey, we are talking about the end of the world
that's
as
right.
we know it. You know,
that's right. So put this one in the positive check mark for me. I like this one.
Yeah, it's good.
By the way, I don't know if you know this or not. On their next album, I think the opening track on Back for the Attack is a song called Kiss of Death.
Uh-huh.
It's about AIDS.
AIDS, yeah. Like fully about AIDS. Yeah. It's pretty impressive.
Yep. At a time when nobody was doing that.
Mm-mm.
All right, last song on the album.
Yeah.
Last song on the album. This song is called Till the Living End.
So I don't.
We're wanking off.
It is a bit self-masturbatory, yes, a little bit. Okay, so I didn't really have another place for this story. It's just this kind of. I heard this, and this is a very, like, it's weird how things turn out sometimes, you know. So Jeff Pilson lost his dad when he was like 4 years old in a car wreck. I think he was in Wisconsin, maybe. A young kid, like 12, 13 years old, something like that. And he and his buddy are walking around singing a commercial for like a local Wisconsin root beer, like just having fun. Yeah. Being, I mean, we did this stuff when we were 13.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you talked about Where's the Beef?
Oscar Mayer song or whatever. Yeah.
All that. And so they're walking around on the playground, you know, just rattling off this song, just being silly. And this other group of 13-year-olds is like, hey, you actually sing pretty good. We've got a band. Do you want to come sing for the band? And he's like, yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we need a bass player too. You want to play bass for us? And he's like, yeah, okay, sure. And so he's like, he thinks, oh, this is a great opportunity. I've never played an instrument before, but I figure I can learn how to do it. And so he, like a kid, has a paper route, gets enough money on his paper route to buy an amp and a bass guitar, and that band never materializes, and he ends up moving away the next year. But that one little seed, that one little moment where he's singing, you know, Wisconsin's, you know, Root Beer Brew or whatever song. Right. And it changes the course of his entire life. Because he's not like most other bass players that were like, yeah, I started playing guitar and then I moved into the bass. He started with the bass and has been a bass guy his whole life.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
And, you know, before Dokken imploded in 1989, which I'll tell that story here in a second.
Yeah.
Pilsen, you know, he talked about how music flipped in 1991 and went from basically people calling him to nobody calling him, like that.
Right. Not even taking his calls.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, but he ended up playing for Foreigner for 20 years.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to talk about the implosion of Dokken.
Okay.
So I think they were kind of on borrowed time anyway, because they could, I mean, George and Don, the two most important members of the band, could not be in the same room together.
Right.
And if you ever watch them perform, like if you look at Dokken, they don't interact on stage. They just move around like they're playing two different bands. So this is after Dream Warriors and Back for the Attack. They kind of, they're still climbing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I saw both Don, Jeff, and George talk about how they were poised to take it up a notch and kind of become mainstream from next level to go up and up a level. But they just couldn't stand each other, okay? And so this is when it all hit the fan. Keep in mind, I mean, I read an LA Times article where Don very clearly said, George and I hate each other. I mean, yeah. They hate each other.
Yeah.
So they're in the limo, and they're going to play at Wembley Arena.
Right.
And they're opening for AC/DC.
Yeah.
Okay? And Don is changing management at the time. He gets in the limo, and he says, Jeff and Mick, I'm changing management. I think you guys ought to do the same. George, I don't give up what you do. And then fists were flying. It was on like Donkey Kong. And I think George got him in a headlock. I saw Don talk about it. This is like on a VH1 special years later. He's like, last time I saw George Lynch, his hands were around my throat and he was trying to choke me. And it just all blew up in that limo ride.
Yeah. And even with all of that animosity, these guys still have gotten together and played again together. Yeah,
they have.
I mean, it usually goes bad pretty quick, but they on multiple occasions have gotten back together for some sort of reunion tour or show or whatever.
That's where the money is.
Yeah. And I think Don's just the only member that's still left. Like everybody else has moved on, but he's still playing as Dokken.
I was going to tell you this. George Lynch has done a couple of side projects.
You got the Lynch Mob. I mean, that's not...
Lynch Mob was
major,
moderately big, right?
Yeah, right.
But he also did a side project with Michael Sweet, who is the lead singer for Striper.
Big. I feel like that James Buckley is a big Michael Sweet fan, if I'm not mistaken.
I would be up for doing a Striper album. I think that'd be fun.
I'm sure he would.
But he also did a side project with Corey Glover, who you may remember is the lead singer for Living Color.
Yeah, that's right. I was like, I know that. Yeah,
and I'm
that's
like, right.
That would be cool.
Corey Glover and George Lynch.
That'd be interesting.
I might check that out.
Yeah, that's interesting.
All right. Is it time for final judgment?
Yep, here we are.
Okay. Why don't you go first? You had no history with these albums.
Yep.
So I'm anxious to hear what you have to say.
So this is an honest struggle for me. It genuinely is. As I mentioned, whenever I first turned on the very first song on this album, after we had, you know, we're done with Rat, I've listened to the entire album of Invasion of Your Privacy, and I hear this first song, and right out of the gate, I'm like, I'm going to like this better. You know, I got it.
Yeah.
I know this is just going to be better.
Right.
And this album, this Dokken album, has more variety. I mean, I like Don's voice probably better than I like Stephen Piercy's voice.
Right.
But for some reason, it just was underwhelming to me once I continued on through the album. I feel like it probably was only partially due to the quality of the music, but also partially due to the quality of the production. I just felt like it kind of had a flatness about it that I just, you know, say what you will about Rat. I mean, what I'm going to say is, if you like one Rat song, you like all the
That's
Rat
right.
songs, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they all, it's AC/DC Back in Black. Every single song sounds the same. So if you like it, you like them all.
That's right.
And I mean, I do. I don't love them all, but I like them. And so I was disappointed in the lack of variety on Rat's album, on Invasion of Your Privacy, but sonically better. Melodically, it's better. The lyrics are more catchy. the songs have more staying power. I mean, I'm just, end of the day, I honestly can't say any more than it's just, this is just how I feel. If I'm walking out the door and I got to pick one of these two, I'm picking Invasion of Your Privacy.
Okay, that's interesting. So I like both of these albums. I think the best song out of these two albums is Lay It Down. But I think the second best one is It's Not Love. So it's close for me, right? Mm-hmm. I like the variety that you get on this album. I think for me, it's a question of, do I like great riffs or do I like great choruses? And I tend to gravitate a little bit more towards the melodic songs, and I like Don's voice better. So for me, honestly, if I'm walking out the door, and I'm surprised to hear myself say this, I'm grabbing Under Lock and Key.
Wow.
So
I'm surprised too. I thought this would be one that we were on the same page on.
I just, as I broke down the songs, I was like, you know, I like that one. I like that one. I like that one. I like that one. So there you go.
Okay.
Awesome. Where are you guys? We want to know.
Tell us what you think. Are you picking Dokken? Are you picking Rat? I mean, there's some major overlap there. So, you know, who knows? or, you know, if you feel like, hey, we didn't pick the right two albums, and you guys are like, you should have done
Back for the Attack and Out of the Cellar.
Yeah, Out of the Cellar. That would have been great.
That would have been great.
We actually talked about it last year. We just missed that one.
We did.
Sorry. But I think we covered all of those songs pretty well. But you guys, tell us what your favorite album is. Tell us what your favorite tracks are. And tell us who you think is the top contender between Rat and Dokken. Rockin' Dokken.
D, next week, come back. It's our What the Heck Happened series.
Oh, my gosh.
It's time, and I'm so excited because you have not seen one of these movies, and it's going to be terrible, and I can't wait to put you through that torture.
So we're going to cover Batman and Robin, George Clooney's only attempt at the Batman.
Yes.
As a What the Heck Happened, versus Superman Returns with Brandon Routh. And, you know, both seemed like they had a whole lot of potential and just really fell flat. And the one I haven't seen, I'll just go ahead and tell you, I haven't seen Batman and Robin. I saw that Uma Thurman's hotness could not overcome the ridiculous idea of Arnold Schwarzenegger bald as Mr. Freeze for me. And I was like, I'm not watching that. I'm not going to. So now I have to watch it. And Jason told me he couldn't make it through in one sitting. He was like, oh, I got to quit. I got to go do something else. It's just making me feel yucky.
Keep in mind, last summer, the worst movie that we've covered here at Shirley Can't Be Serious is Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Ever. Like, it's the worst movie we've covered ever.
We have a contender, ladies and gentlemen.
I just can't even imagine that, how bad it must be.
Come back next week. We're going to have Jeff Johnson on, and we're going to go through this and ask what the heck happened.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, see you guys next week. Thanks.
Bye, guys.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.